Blog Talk Radio.
We've had the best football picks for a decade, and we ain't stopping now. Live from the IMLD home studios, in its 10th season, this is, in much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Now your hosts, Jay and Dre. Welcome in, everybody, on the week between the Super Bowl. We have the Honors and Dishonors show live for you. Yes, you know what time it is, you know what you're here for, and you're going to get it. This is, in much less detail, the podcast here with you live on a Sunday night, February the 5th, 2023. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We've got our tuxedos, our cummerbunds. We are ready to hand out the hardware, as only we can do it, in our own special way. You know, you can tune in to the NFL Honors and get all the guys giving the speeches about how heartfelt everything is and how happy they are to be honored, but this is the show that gives out the hardware to those who deserve it for the good and for the bad. This is the show that covers everything that happened of significance in the NFL season, this past season, 2022, the stuff that the league wants you to remember, and believe me, the stuff that they would really hope that you completely forget. But we do not forget. It is IMLD's 2022 Honors and Dishonors show, and we are so happy to have you here and ready to give out the awards. Jay, I know you're ready.
I am always ready. These are my favorite shows anytime we do awards, which is why the football party was so much fun this year with the new format, because it's a miniature version of what we're going to do tonight. And I've got, as usual, my set awards. I know you've got yours, where you can go a little bit more freeform. And, yeah, it's always fun to look back at the year, to find the things that were the best, the worst, things that we forgot about. I actually had one tonight as I was going through, because I wanted to translate my awards into the program that I've been tracking all the awards throughout the year. And I realized that in my notes, I had a note to myself about an award I'm giving out tonight. Like, don't forget this, because I forgot. And I'm glad I had it there. So I'm like, oh, perfect. So I don't have to think about that award, and it just slid right in there. And it's a good one. I don't think it's something that we ever talked about on the show, which are always some of my favorite awards that we give out when we actually can sneak something in past the other one that never makes it on air in all the hours that we do this show, that we can still get to the awards and pull out something new.
I too have something for one award that I know we didn't, if we talked about it, it was briefly in passing, but I don't think we mentioned it at all in the show, but we'll see. If it's the same exact award, if it covers the same content, I'm leaving. I'm done. I'm just walking off and
we're retired.
I'm going somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. I cannot imagine it's the same thing, but I've said that before, and it wound up being something similar. So you never know. With us, if you're a new listener, Jay and I are lifelong best friends, literally since first grade. So sometimes we have the exact same train of thought on some things, and we surprise each other by being right there on the same wavelength. We really are brothers from a different mother. We really do enjoy doing these shows. You have to enjoy doing shows if you're doing a podcast for 10 years and going on forward from here, obviously. And our award shows, we definitely get a little loose, get a little crazy. I've got some fixed awards that I give out, and then later on, towards the end of the show, I'll do some where I try to be clever and give some awards that aren't exactly listed or you know, things that people would not necessarily think of. So we try to keep it creative. Everyone needs a creative outlet, and this is ours, and we're very happy to have you here listening. So as always, our tradition on our Honors and Dishonors is the first half of the show I turn over for his set list of awards. I now give the floor to Jay.
Thank you. Well, these first two that I give out, you and I do give out sort of in tandem, because I give out my MVP, and then you can give the shit and least valuable player and drizzling shit. So at least for these two, you know, there's participation back and forth. This MVP was the hardest award for me to give out this year. Everything else was easy. I probably could have slid everything in to these awards that I already have in 5 minutes. But MVP I struggled with. Last year, did we both go Cooper Kupp last year?
No, we shocked each other. That was where I took the white guy and shot you, and you took the black guy and shot me. You had Debo.
Oh, that's right. So I had Debo and you had Cooper Kupp. So that was the shocking one. For some reason, I thought we both had Cooper Kupp. Maybe we should have. But
maybe.
Debo was the man last year.
I had no argument with Debo.
Yeah. This year, I struggled. And I dug into it, and I put thought into it. You know, what is MVP, you know, about the value of the player? Looking at where teams are. You know, we unfortunately don't have to hold ourselves to just the standard of, like, regular season MVP. We're talking about the most valuable player that we have seen when we give this award out, because it's our show and we can do whatever we want.
Right.
And
I like it. You got philosophical.
Thank you. And the numbers, just to me, that really stood out for MVP – you know, 3,700 yards passing. I hate giving it to a quarterback. You know, I always try to do it different, but 3,700 yards passing, 8 yards per attempt, 35 touchdowns between throwing and rushing, and only 6 interceptions. Over 100 quarterback rating in a league that we don't really care about quarterback rating anymore, but over 100 still good. And, man, I gave it to Jalen Hurts.
Wow.
I look at where that team is, and I think the problem that we have when we look at Jalen Hurts 2022 is separating him from Jalen Hurts 2021. You know, because the change was so dramatic. You know, everything improved. It went to that next degree. The passing improved. Obviously, when you throw A.J. Brown into the mix, that's always going to help. They've got that rushing attack, but, you know, through the air, on the ground, we saw that team without him. It was the Gardner Minshew show, wasn't a very good show. Just dynamic in that offense, and got his team all the way to the Super Bowl. And it wasn't really, you know, it wasn't a rough ride for them. They didn't really have the toughest pathway to the Super Bowl this year. We can talk about that in the next show when we pick the Super Bowl. I was very impressed, and I was really splitting hairs between him and Mahomes. You know, all these guys were all sort of clustered in there together. But I have to appreciate, because I know you might not be going there, but I'm going to appreciate the body of work that Jalen Hurts put on paper and on film and on the field in 2022. Through the air, on the ground, with his legs, with his arm, he did it all. He's my MVP.
I can't take it away from him. He was absolutely incredible this year. He was much better than I would have expected from him. You know, throwing A.J. Brown in the mix helps a lot, obviously. That is a different quarterback from last year, completely different guy from what I saw last year. But it can't all be A.J. Brown. As much as I wanted to just be because they added A.J. Brown, obviously he had to improve a lot as a quarterback. In addition to having a great target like A.J. Brown to add to what he already had there with Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert and whatnot. He had a lot of help. He had a lot of incredible offensive line play. Going by any metric you want, going by PFF grades, whatever you want to call it, he benefited from some great protection, and that's not his fault. So I'm not saying that to take anything from him. But I'm just saying the organization around him helps out and obviously props somebody up when they go from where he was last year, which is, frankly, you didn't want to see him throwing if you were a fan of the Eagles last year. because it seemed like to me, anytime he was in a position to have to throw, like having to come from behind, and everyone knows that he was throwing, it didn't look good. It looked like he was not somebody you wanted to have under center in that moment, in that scenario, because you take away the run threat and you just make him pocket passer. Last year, it wasn't good. It wasn't any good. And this year, completely different. Completely different guy, much more confidence. Again, when you have A.J. Brown to throw to, you're going to have more confidence. But, yeah, it's a different guy. It's incredible, the metamorphosis in 1 year. Similar to Tua in that last year, and this year Tua is total different guy, complete metamorphosis. And also the similarity, obviously, you bring in one of the top wide receivers in the league and put him in the mix, and now you have, whoa, look at this. It's a much different quarterback. But it's not just that. It's also the scheme and the coaching, and not just having a great player added to the mix. So, yeah, it's not the same guy for me, and it's not quite the same process for me to figure out who I think was the shit. But no argument with what Jalen Hurts has done this year. He's been incredible. When you started with the quarterback stats, I kind of thought, oh, he's going with Pat. I just knew you were going with Patrick Mahomes. But hey, no argument with Jalen Hurts. He's been incredible too. So
I didn't even add in there on top of the 3,700 yards passing was the over 700 yards rushing.
Yeah. Oh, by the way,
Twenty-two touchdowns passing and 13 on the ground. That's a weapon.
It is. I mean, the ground is almost the first thing I think of with Hurts, just, I guess, being a Bears fan and thinking about that one play where they snapped the ball and he just ran up the middle and nobody was anywhere near him. It was like, oh, my God. How do you forget about his running? They just totally bailed out and forgot that he could run the football. So I still have nightmares about that play.
A picture of that one. It was so bad.
The Red Sea just parted, or the Green Sea with all the grass in front of him. Just incredible. So where I go with when I decide who I think was the shit, which is my version of the MVP, I go differently. I go more visceral. I go with who was the one guy who made me say, oh, shit, the most during the season. It's pretty much that simple. Like the guy that displayed the most moments that made me go, damn, or wow, or oh, fuck, he's the man. It's pretty much that simple. So to not give it to Jalen Hurts or Patrick Mahomes is not a slight at all to those guys. I guess they were more stable players than spectacular. Maybe I value the spectacular a little too much by doing it that way, but that's just it's my award, and we can do what we want, as we just said. So by that criteria, this year, the man that made me go, oh, fuck, or oh, shit, the most, he is him. You mentioned him. Justin Jefferson, the Vikings wide receiver, and the numbers behind that, not just making oh shit plays, but just being the steady presence and the presence in this league of unprecedented high talent at wide receiver. 128 catches by Justin Jefferson. That was best in the league. 1,809 receiving yards. That was best in the league. 8 touchdowns, 14.1 yards per pass attempt, per catch, and a hidden number in there, 80 first down catches. Think about the math on that. 128 catches on the year, and 80 of them were for first downs. That's like two-thirds of your catches where you just say, okay, give me the damn ball, and we're going to move these sticks, and we're going to keep it moving. That is unbelievable. That is some incredible presence, field presence, importance to the team to keep the chains going. And by the way, no turnovers, no fumbles, no nothing like that. Just as steady as it gets. But even more than the steadiness was the plays where he just willed himself and just went up and took a ball. Didn't matter how many defenders were around him, two defenders, three of it, didn't matter. Unbelievable catch radius, just stretching this way, that way, up in the air. It didn't matter. You put the ball anywhere near him, and he was going to bring it in, which makes it even more egregious that his quarterback, with the season on the line in the playoffs, decided that, I don't want to go to that guy that's been making all these plays all year. I'm going to check down and throw a 3-yard pass on 4th and 8 and hope that we can get a 5th down. But anyway, Justin Jefferson, man. You were the shit.
He was. Probably the one I thought about the most. And this might sound silly, but I knew you were giving it to him.
Okay.
I knew. If this was the most predictable of all of the awards, I knew, because we talked about it all year, how do you not, you know, especially the way your award is structured, nobody made more plays like that than Justin Jefferson. You know, 18 is him. Highlighted that multiple times on this show. We had a lot of him, literally, in our awards this year for his performances. So I'm not going to argue one bit with what you said. Elevating that quarterback and that team, probably the brightest spot on that team was Justin Jefferson and what he's been able to accomplish in, 2 years?
Is this his third year?
The second or third, but yeah. He's right up there already. And it's just too bad the Vikings are such frauds. But more on that later.
Yes. So your least valuable player.
Least valuable player. I didn't struggle as much with this one. A couple reasons why. I have this sort of unwritten rule, very baseball-esque, right? I have an unwritten rule that I tend to not double up least valuable with worst rookie. That's hard to do. You have to be something special, bad, to have me crap on a rookie, you know, twice in one show. Because you're a rookie. Very rarely are the expectations that high. So I eliminated all the rookies because there were some bad ones this year. Don't worry, we'll get to that part later. Then I ended up finding myself going, can I really give least valuable player to somebody who only played in four games?
Games, wow.
And the answer to that was yes. Because in those four games, you only played four games, and you, the at least valuable player, directly affected the outcome for two teams. Least valuable player, Matt Amendola.
Oh, wow.
The kicker for the Chiefs and the Cardinals, losing both of those teams a game. First one was Chiefs-Colts back on September 25th. This is a way back machine. Chiefs, Harrison Butker's hurt. Matt Amendola is missing extra points. He's missing field goals. Andy Reid is so afraid of the kicker, passes up a field goal that ices the game, and it wasn't a long one, to go for it, and then doesn't get it and allows the Colts to go all the way down and end up tying and then eventually winning that game. So then he gets cut because he's terrible. And then what happens? Oh, the Arizona Cardinals pick him up, have the Philadelphia Eagles completely on the ropes 2 weeks later, to the point where you and I even gave this an award because we could not believe that after as bad as he was 2 weeks prior, that somebody not only had picked him up, but was trotting him out there to try to kick a field goal against the Eagles to potentially tie that game late. And, of course, he misses it.
Of course.
How can you wreck two games for two different teams in a two-week span? If that's not least valuable, I don't know what is.
Yeah, that's a breathtaking amount of suck to fit in. So, you're a kicker. You don't have that many opportunities already because you're a kicker, but you managed to take full advantage of your opportunities with two different teams to completely screw over and screw up a couple of different games. So, yeah, not only was he least valuable for what he was doing, but as you mentioned, he's least valuable because it affected the decision-making of both of those teams going forward, because both of those teams had opportunities later to use that kicker and the next week and just said, No, we're not kicking. We can't trust this guy. We're just going to keep going for it every time because we can't trust this guy. And it's like, why is he on your team if you can't trust him? Why would you even father going through that. So yeah, that
and
was
we
the
had
guy.
That we had that discussion. Like just go for just always go for it or just go for two. I mean, why do you even bother rostering this kicker?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it broke down to. So both teams eventually came to their senses and got rid of him again. So if we see him surface once again, I think we discussed that too. Like that's clearly a team that is trying to tank and is trying to lose on purpose if they pick up Matt Amendola to kick for them because he clearly is not the guy.
The shocking part of this story, as I find out as I'm quote-unquote researching this Matt Amendola story, is that late in the season when the Packers were having an issue not knowing if Mason Crosby was going to be able to kick, they had signed Matt Amendola as their emergency kicker.
Oh, no.
We could have seen this three times in one season.
Wow. Well, that's that guy. I'm glad you remembered him and gave him an award because, frankly, I'd forgotten about all of that garbage.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
His career stats, not career, but maybe his career, but his season stats ended all the way back in the mid-October. So,
wow.
You know, that was the next game for the Cardinals. They lost to the Seahawks, and he missed an extra point in that game.
Yeah. They're like, okay, we're done with this. So it took a while, but eventually they figured that out. So great award by you. Great recall to remember that loser who just completely should not have been given the opportunities that he was given. My award for worst player, least valuable, I call it the drizzling shits, and it's similar to how I award the shit. It's the guy that I think made me wretch the most during the season, the guy that made me the most number of times go, what are you doing out there? Why? Why do you suck so bad? So it's usually a guy that's been a veteran that has expectations of not sucking and all of a sudden decides to suck, because sometimes it just goes that quickly with some of these guys. You never know. So I've given it to all sorts of players before. I remember giving it to the running back Ray Rice right before he punched his wife out in the elevator, or his fiance, because he was averaging 3 yards a carry. And as I pointed out at the time, the league didn't really care if you punch your girlfriend out in the elevator. If he was averaging more than 3 yards a carry, he'd have still been on the Ravens. But it's because he sucked as a football player is why he got cut. So it's the guy that just makes me just the most times go, dude, what are you doing? Why are you so bad? And this year, and there's so many candidates for the drizzling shit, so I had a hard time paring it down myself. But this year, Russ, man.
He earned it.
He was not cooking. He was not cooking in Denver. Career low, 84 passer rating, 37 QBR, as also a career low. 16 touchdowns, 11 INTs, 55 sacks. He just kept getting his ass kicked. 55 sacks in the middle of all the terrible throws and the bad play. The 7 yards per throw, that was a rally. Like, he was much lower than that. Jay just dropped right in the middle of all that, unfortunately. So we're having connection issues, unfortunately, again tonight. So I'm sure Jay will get back on shortly. Hopefully I'm still on the air. Yep, there he is.
I clicked
you okay
the wrong
over
button.
There?
I clicked the wrong
button. Oh, okay. All right. It's not connection issues. Good. But yes, as I was saying about Russ, the 55 sacks in the middle of all that sucking, it should be 56 because his play was so bad that he got his coach sacked. So that doesn't count the sacking of Nate Hackett as coach, but it should because he really got fired after half a season because of how terrible Russell Wilson was at quarterback. And I kept waiting for it. I kept waiting for him to get better. I'm like, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. It's a new team. He's been with Seattle for 10 years, new players, new coaching, just everything is brand new. He needs to get acclimated. Just give him some time to get back on track and he'll be Russ again. No, just never happened. All sorts of games, primetime games, games where they go to overtime and the crowd is so disgusted by his play that they get up in mass and leave. Like, we ain't watching more of this shit. This is awful. Just you name it, it was terrible. No matter what Russell Wilson tried to do, he could not break out of the season-long slump. Now they pay out draft picks and whatnot to get Sean Payton in the building. see if that's going to turn around next year. But for this year, for the 2022 season, Russell Wilson, you were the drizzling shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add to that, so I'll let someone else do it.
Players, they have the ball, and they're going to see if they can find a way to move it.
Oh, nice.
And so what's up? Oh, there's Russ Wilson. Oh, no! That's called an interception.
It's Bobby Wagner.
That's not what he wanted to cook.
Oh, no. That is definitely not what he wanted to cook. That was some sour cooking right there.
Yeah. No, that was well-deserved. And again, that's like you had to be the top of the pile of turds for this season.
Yes.
The cream did not rise to the top in this case.
No, the shit rose to the top of the toilet bowl. That's what that was.
Yeah, no, and especially, you know, we talk about, like, my least valuable, the short body of work. Russ had voluminous statistics and performances that just made you scratch your head and go, well, what am I watching? And then, like you said, the saddest part is you're waiting for it. Like, okay, this is the week. Oh, no, this is the week. And it just never really happened. And then he finally has a good game and he gets hurt.
Right. Yeah, it was tough. It was a very, very tough watch for all Broncos fans and for all Russell Wilson fans. Hopefully he can turn around next year is all I can say.
All right. So I'll rifle off a few here. Just run down the rest of my list, and then we'll – unless we hit both the same thing. So feel free to jump in if I give an award to something that you doubled up on with me. That's usually the way we end up doing it. But quote of the year. And again, with another award that you can just give away, like there's a quote almost every week, but this is a first for the in much less detail audio-visual portion of the show. I don't have the quote ripped because there's really no reason to play it because it will be the shortest quote ever for quote of the year. I give you no. As uttered by Zach Wilson after a 10-3 loss to New England in which he went 9-for-22 for 77 yards, was sacked 4 times for 33 yards, and then was asked after the game, do you feel like you let the defense down at all? And his answer, no. And that was it. That was the whole answer. But that, in a nutshell, was the season of Zach Wilson and sadly of the Jets, where they felt that, you know, here we are thinking that turning to Mike White is the answer. Like, we have to go, you and I were even bought in, like, oh, Mike White's back.
Yeah, he's the man.
That's how bad Zach Wilson was. But, yes, he gives us the humdinger of a quote, and no introspection, no humility, no taking one for the team, realizing that, yes, you are the reason you lost. Yes, you let your team down. Do you feel like you let them down? No.
No.
That's it. No. So I get that the quarterback's got to be confident and exude that, but you've also got to be real and honest. And that was, I think that's the moment when he kind of lost his team because that defense all year played their asses off. And, you know, and won games despite their quarterback play. And here was his chance to take one and show some leadership and just completely didn't.
Fabulous. Just a breathtaking lack of awareness of what the quarterback position is and what you're supposed to be doing as the quarterback, as the leader of the team. Just a beautiful chef's kiss example of why Zach Wilson is not the guy that the Jets want as their franchise quarterback going forward. I don't have any award for that particular quote, but I'll be revisiting Mr. Wilson later on.
Ah, okay. Oh, boy. Play of the year. Again, I don't want to, you know, give too many flowers to the same player on this show, but there was no play better this year than the Justin Jefferson 4th-and-18 catch during that
Amen.
Vikings comeback against Buffalo. That truly was the play. That's the jump off the couch catch.
Yep.
Goes up and snags that ball just hanging out there, takes that thing away from a couple of defenders in the crucial, like, that is game over. If he does not make that catch, ball game, Bills win, comeback for naught. He goes up, pulls that thing away from two defenders and converts that, which, again, even more head-scratching why he just ghosts completely. Not that he ghosted, but that the ball just was not going his way late in the season, like the last couple games, and then in the playoffs, why the ball was not just going repeatedly towards Justin Jefferson. If 70% of his catches are a first down, throw the ball towards him. There was no better play than that one. In all the minutes of football through 17 weeks, 18 weeks, 17 games for every team, that truly was the best play of the year.
Yeah, the context of game on the line, was it 4th-and-18 or something crazy like that? And the throw, where the ball was it didn't wind up in a place where a receiver should have caught it. And he caught it because he's Justin Jefferson. Just unreal, unbelievable play. Also, the context of in that game, it came right after Stephon Diggs had made a disgusting one-handed catch of his own to get on all the highlights that should have been the talk of everybody after the game, except Justin Jefferson sort of one-ups them, says, hold my beer, watch this, and makes that play in between over defenders. The ball should not have been caught. Whatever the next-gen percentages could have possibly be of the percentage, the likeliness of making that catch, it was very, very low. And Justin Jefferson made it, again, with the context of he had to make that catch or else the game's over. Just no other option. He has to bring that in, and he brings it in. And the Vikings go on to win one of their many incredibly close games and 100% put it on Justin Jefferson why they won that game, because if he doesn't make that catch, they don't win it. I don't have anything about that catch, but I will be revisiting the Vikings later on.
As will I. Worst play can take on all sorts of meanings this year. Because
a lot of options, a lot of choices.
There were plays on the field. There were plays that affected things. It was insane. I mean, it was one hell of a crazy year for football. But to me, I mean, and you think about, and I don't want to say it's an upset, because I'm not going with the DeMar Hamlin thing, because that to me was not a play, right? That was plays over, and then something happens, right?
That was a medical emergency.
We still don't know exactly what happened. There was a medical emergency. But I'm going to something similar. I'm going to our boy Tua repping for Coolio against the Bengals back in a week 4 loss in a game he should not have been playing the week after the Buffalo game. And I almost gave worst play of the year to him going back into that game. Just first snap. First snap after he bangs his head on the turf because his back hurt. Whatever. He was clearly concussed, went back into a game he had no business going back into. But then the next week he gets like kind of weirdly spun and ragdolled to the turf, and then bangs his head hard into the turf again, and then proceeds to just look like he's laying on the ground throwing gang signs.
Yeah.
And admitted that he was completely unconscious after the play, had no business being out there. That's the pit in the stomach play, because, you know, the DeMar Hamlin thing was kind of a freak play. The Tua and what happened to Tua was completely preventable, and that's what makes it the worst. There was manipulation, lying, whatever you want to call it, all sorts of things. I don't trust anything coming from the Dolphins and any of their medical stuff. We've talked about it a lot on the show this year, but nothing sort of encapsulated that more than that play of him ragdolling onto the turf, getting spun around, and then kind of thrown onto the back of his head. and just laying there unconscious on the ground with the hands up in the air because it must have been cold down on the field.
That's what Joe Buck says.
That's just what Joe Buck would have thought. And all the way back to Week 4, but we don't forget. That, to me, was the worst play of the year.
Yeah, great call. Just nauseating because, like you said, it was extremely preventable and foreseeable. For anyone who, even in passing, studies what happens with concussions and second impact syndrome, and why it's so dangerous, like that, you're inviting death basically when you send somebody out so soon after having a concussion. But hey, if you just lie and say that his back was hurt and that's why he was staggering around, then you don't have to acknowledge that there was a first concussion. And the Dolphins never have officially acknowledged that there was a first concussion. So I'll go ahead and give this award since we've covered so much of what was in the award. I had the Rub Some Dirt on It award for the Miami Dolphins, who kept looking at their franchise quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, get smashed around like a stock car and said, he's fine. Our doctors cleared him, so he must be okay. He staggered because his back was hurt. That's why he was staggering. It wasn't because of his back. And so when he gets knocked out in Cincinnati and throwing up gang signs, Miami gets indignant about it, and Mike McDaniel pretends like they'd never send him back out if he actually was hurt. All right, that's when I lost respect for Mike McDaniel at that point, because it's like clearly he's trying to protect the organization more so than the player. That's when I just said, okay, I see what's going on here. They're just trying to cover their own ass and cover up the fact that they sent this guy out there who clearly didn't need to be sent back out there. So he comes back again by Week 7, and he holds up for most of the rest of the way. Eventually he gets concussed again and has to sit out. He wasn't at the Pro Bowl games, I presume. I don't know because I didn't watch any of them.
I watched zero.
I mean, we both watched zero of it, but he was a Pro Bowler, but he wasn't able to participate in the Pro Bowl games because of his third, fourth. We don't know how many concussions he's had because the Dolphins are lying. They're lying about everything. So, kid, you don't know me, but I got some free advice for you. Stay down. Stay down next time. You have to protect yourself, too, because they're not going to protect you. The Dolphins are clearly not protecting you. The league is clearly not protecting you. Nobody, none of these independent doctors, nobody that's in charge of protecting somebody who clearly doesn't need to be out on the field is protecting him. And it sucks to say because he played so well this year, but some people just aren't meant to be in those positions. Somebody whose brain gets bounced around that softly, that easily, you don't need to be playing pro football. I'm sorry. You just don't. No matter how good you are at football, he needs to step back and step down. And he's not going to do it. Clearly, he loves playing football more than anything. But he needs to protect himself because the Dolphins aren't going to do it.
Right. And the news blurb was yesterday or the day before, like, oh, hey, wow, great story. Tua has cleared the concussion protocol, and he'll be ready for the 2023 season. I'm like, wait, he just cleared?
Right.
It's the Super Bowl week coming. He just cleared. Okay, his team, that was like a month and a half ago.
Right. The protocol from the third concussion that he suffered like in week 17 or something. And he just got clear from it.
Right.
Okay.
That's uplifting. Okay.
Yeah. Y'all can call that good news if you want. I don't think so.
Rookie of the year. I looked at the stats a little bit more this year, and you know, and the grades, and that, you know, that talks to me. And for rookie of the year, and this was an interesting one because at all the positions, there was one rookie that dominated their category, completely number one rated in their position as a rookie. And it showed on the field. So it wasn't one of these where what's on the paper, it's not the Trayvon Walker situation, right? Where, he's better on the field than he is on paper. No, this player was the best on paper at his position and on the field this year. Sauce Gardner, Rookie of the Year.
Hell yeah.
Basically comes in as a rookie, turns out another Revis Island situation with the Jets. I mean, they got themselves a good one. That defense, no problems there. We can talk about that offense. We have all day long. but no problems with that defense. He was locking people down, making big plays, and yes, he was the Pro Football Focus number one graded cornerback. And for a coverage grade, it wasn't even close. Graded out over 90 as a cover corner. Nobody else in the league did that. Nobody else did that and was also the number one rated overall cornerback. He was him on defense this year, and he was, to me, the best rookie of the year.
And the only thing I'll add is it's so great when somebody comes in with the kind of hype that he had for what he was capable of doing at that position and then actually live up to it. Like, Sauce was Sauce before he even got to the NFL. He had the Sauce necklace at the draft. He had everything going. Everybody was talking about how he's going to be a lockdown, shutdown corner, and he was. He was absolutely what everyone said he was going to be. And I'm just very excited to watch New York Jets defense under Robert Saleh for the next decade, because it looks like it's going to be a bitch.
Yes. Yeah, but they got to get that offense figured out.
Yeah, isn't that always the way?
how does this always how many times are we going to see like this with the Jags, with the Texans? You know, you think about these great defenses, and then you just have the offense, competency at all to win it and put it together. I mean, the only team I can think of lately, the Ravens did it, but that was because they were barely competent when they won that Super Bowl with Dilfer?
Trent Dilfer, yes.
That 2000 Ravens team? Because that was that and the 85 Bears, those are the best straight defensive teams I've ever seen. But the only team I can think of in more recent memory to do this was the Seahawks.
Yeah, Richard Sherman.
Right, were the Legion
Company.
The real Legion of Boom, not the Legion
right.
of Room, but the Legion of Boom with those guys. And then to have, Russ and, old Russ, not old,
right.
old Russ now, I meant previous Russ. And, Lynch.
Russ and Beast.
Beast mode, and then they actually had it all put together. That's the last time I can think of that sort of marriage of offense and defense. Even think about that Broncos defense that won the Super Bowl kind of in spite of Peyton Manning.
With the crippled Peyton Manning on a walker throwing the football, yeah.
So it's so hard to get that marriage together where you have punishing defense and a world-class offense at the same time. So
it sounds easy to say, but all you need is a caretaker quarterback. You just need a quarterback that isn't going to actively hurt your team, because that Jaguars team could have done so much if their quarterback wasn't Blake Bortles. Those Jets teams could have done so much if their quarterback wasn't Mark Sanchez. Like, those quarterbacks actively hurt those great defenses, and that was the difference. Just get a caretaker.
I mean, who was the Texans quarterback that year that they – like locking everybody? Was that Brock Osweiler?
Oh, Lord.
I mean, they just couldn't figure it out. Then, you think about all of these teams with these dominant defenses and they have no offense, and these are all the teams that would get up on the Patriots and then collapse in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
They paved the road for Tommy for a lot of years. Worst rookie. Worst rookie of the year. Man, this is – I'm not kind with this award, but hey – over the last few years, worst rookies have turned it around in a big way. Last year, it was Trevor Lawrence, right?
Yeah.
And we said, last year we were talking about Trevor Lawrence, like, tell me a Trevor Lawrence highlight. And we were like, this year, he made it happen. He got that team all the way to the playoffs, and he had a great year. So worst rookie isn't the death knell, that it used to be. I don't know about this one. Worst rookie of the year, played in 8 games. This is a quarterback. 8 games, barely north of a 50% completion percentage, which was good in 1982. 4.5 yards per attempt.
Oh, no, this isn't my guy, is it?
No touchdowns and 3 picks. How could you be worse than Malik Willis?
Oh, poor guy.
Man. That's all sorts of awful at that position where you are so bad as the backup quarterback that they have no trust in you to go and win a winner-take-all game. They sign a dude off the street to play in that game over Malik Willis because he was so awful that they had no faith. And it showed. Those numbers sound ugly. The play matched it.
Yes, it did.
42.8 quarterback. The quarterback rating doesn't mean much in the middle numbers to me, but at the low end and at the high end, that's usually like if you're over 100, but if you're at 42 for quarterback, oh, my God. He only attempted 61 passes this year, still managed to take 10 sacks. Just awful. Not good. I felt bad for the kid. He was clearly out of his league, overmatched. Once Ryan Tannehill went down, that whole season just evaporated into thin air for the Tennessee Titans. And in a stretch where they just needed to win one game,
they couldn't
come up with anything. So I hate to pile on the kid, but this isn't a nice award. This is worst rookie. And Malik Willis was really bad.
So this is my account living here in Tennessee and watching Titans football. I was excited to see him get into some games because I'm over Ryan Tannehill as a starter. I don't think he's the guy you want back there to – I don't think he can win a title for you. I didn't know what Malik Willis had to offer, but you don't know until he gets in there. So I was really excited when he was able to finally get the opportunity. And there was one specific game where he played against the Houston Texans and General Mills, who was my sort of darling quarterback from last year that I was happy to see get an opportunity this year. And so I was like, okay, let's see what both of these guys got. And that's one of the worst quarterback games I've ever seen, ever. Both of them were so bad. And I just was like, why are they even trying to throw this kid out there and do anything? Because clearly he's not ready. He's just not ready. You know, not every quarterback that gets in there is ready for the position and ready for the responsibility. Malik Willis wasn't ready. It's just, it is what it is. But if he's going to be the long-term answer, he needs a lot of work and a lot of coaching because right now it's bad. Now, like you said, it can turn around. I don't know if he's got the physical ability of a Justin Fields, but Justin Fields also looked like completely not ready his first year when he got in there. And then you get some new coaching and you get some new philosophies and how to use him as a quarterback. And, oh, look at that, Pro Bowler, Justin Fields. Did he make the Pro Bowl? I didn't even pay attention. I don't know. But
Tyler
Huntley
did.
With how many passing touchdowns?
That's the Joe Girardi Pro Bowl.
That's exactly what I thought when I saw him too.
This is it. We said it.
Well, at least I didn't make an award out of it or something. But yeah, when I saw that, Joe Girardi Award. Yeah. We've run out of everybody else at your position. We called everyone. We have nobody left. Can you come and play in the All-Star game? Okay, I'll be there. Sure.
But you know what? They could never take it away from Tyler Huntley. He's a Pro Bowler.
And they can never take it away from All-Star catcher Joe Girardi.
Yeah, who was like the ninth alternate.
Everybody else was on their vacations and on their yachts in Cabo.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. Anyway, yes, Malik Willis was bad and was not – any good at all. The guy off the street, Josh Dobbs, to try to win the winning your in play-in game against the Jaguars. And he almost won it. But
he almost did.
However unimpressive Josh Dobbs may have been, everyone knows that Malik Willis would have been much worse in that position, and that's why they made that move. So, well-earned worst rookie. But, hey, you can turn it around.
It's always next year. Rookie steal of the draft. So this is going to go to the anti-Malik Willis. This is the Mirror Universe Malik Willis or Bizarro World Malik Willis, who in 9 games completed 67% of his throws for an 8.1 yards per attempt. with 13 touchdowns and 4 picks and a 107 quarterback rating. You know who it is. You can't be the rookie steal of the draft if you are the last pick in the draft. The only way you can get that award is if you are dead last, Mr. DFL, Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy. He deserves it. He clearly was the rookie steal of the draft and one of the best stories of the year.
Yeah, this award was made
for him.
Right.
And I've had this award for years, but nobody has earned this better than Brock Purdy.
No, I dare say you're never going to find a lower drafted player be more valuable in his rookie year than Brock Purdy.
No. And it was an amazing story. And yeah, it was the right situation. And, you know, playing for the mad genius does a lot of things, but he still had to make the plays. Malik Willis ain't making those plays.
No.
So yeah, it was a great story. It ended just, about that sick feeling, but we'll talk about that next week. This is all about the totality of the season. We still have a whole recap of the conference championships to do, but that, it didn't end the way you would have liked it to. You would have liked to have seen that at least been competitive, but it was a great story right up until the end. Brock Purdy is going to make things interesting for the Niners.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about last week. We don't want to look about.
I'm not here to talk about the past.
We're not going to worry about that. That is an unbelievable story for Brock Purdy. It is going to put the 49ers on notice as far as what they thought their plans were at quarterback as opposed to what they're going to be going forward. I kind of wonder if they should put that much value in it. Like, I don't know if you want to make it out like this guy is the next Joe Montana, because I think it's kind of obvious that Kyle Shanahan can kind of do that with anybody. So I don't know how much of that is the coaching and how much of that is Brock Purdy, but the kid did what you asked. The kid absolutely did whatever you needed him to do when he got in there took the team as far as he could possibly take him before that gruesome injury last week. So kudos to Brock Purdy.
Yeah, they're clearly going to let, you know, Jimmy G's a goner. So they go back to Trey Lance, let's say, and Brock Purdy's the backup. Boy, what's that leash look like on Trey Lance? You know,
probably extremely short.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy in front of Brock Purdy after what he just did over this 9-game stretch, winning every game he started, I believe.
That's right.
As in the regular season, just incredible. So that, however, did not make my story of the year. It was a great story, but we've already kind of talked about my story of the year. I'm giving this one to the. I didn't mean to, make a joke here, but I kind of did. I've given this one to what I call the player safety twins. It's Tua and DeMar. How is that not story of the year? The saga of Tua with the concussions and then all of that going on, and then you have the DeMar Hamlin, you know, emergency, collapses on the field, everything around that, just the DeMar Strong and everything that was just crazy all the way up and through the end of that Bills run. And then as that's going, you still have this Tua saga with the concussions, and is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Oh, he hasn't cleared the protocol. Oh, it's going to be Skylar Thompson and that whole sort of disingenuousness of the Miami Dolphins. But, yes, the player safety twins, that's my story of the year.
Definitely no arguing with that. I would even broaden it and say just player safety and player injuries – seem to be the story of the year. I don't remember a year seeing this many catastrophic injuries. There were more concussions. Seemed to be more concussions this year than ever before, and then the numbers came out and backed it up. There were like 20% more concussions this year than last year. And then that's on top of the DeMar Hamlin medical emergency, which took, you know, the entire football world by storm and made it hold its breath for a week. And absolutely was the story for several weeks in the NFL. I guess just the danger of football, which is always hanging over your head when you're playing and us as spectators, when we're watching, we put it aside to enjoy the spectacle, but then you get a hit that has a guy throwing up gang signs in the middle of the field, and you have another hit that makes a guy's heart stop, and it's like, you can't avoid it. You can't ignore how dangerous this game is, and it was at the forefront for all of us watching this year. And then juxtapose that sort of with Lamar Jackson doing what he can to sort of preserve himself from all of this disaster and catastrophe so that he can get his paper and get some long-term security. And it makes you kind of understand, like, yeah, I think I want to preserve myself and keep things as safe as I possibly could as well, because you see what can happen out here. You know, one wrong hit and everything can change for you just like that. I think we always knew that, but this year it really hit home and put it even closer to home for all of us.
Yeah, and it's, you know, in a year that you could have had a lot of different stories. Well, and again, with the concussions, 20% increase, I don't honestly believe that there were 20% more concussions. They caught.
But there was 20% more reported or
yes,
caught.
They, yes, they admitted to 20% more concussions, you know, with all the rules, with the spotting in from the sideline. Hell, you even had, I forget who the player was, you had the receiver pointing at the other player on his team like, no, the dude's concussed, stop the game.
How do you have independent spotters when you got a guy standing there that can't stand up and then line up for the next play because he's wobbling because that's how messed up he is? Like, what what is the point of the independent spotters?
And his teammate has to basically, you know,
like, hey, y'all want to get my
like
man?
Like, be waving,
he's
like, looking around, over, like, pointing at the guy, like, no, he ain't right. Stop the game. Yeah. Okay. So, moving on. My Jimmy G team, that would be the Houston Texans Memorial preseason cheek pick to make the next playoffs. This one for me was easy. I'm giving this one to the Detroit Lions.
Yep.
That you know, and I know, they are going to be darlings next year. They're going to be the, well, what about team? You know, what about the Detroit Lions? You know, they're going to be that team after the way they finished, the way they ended the Packers, the way they finished so strong, running off all those wins late, kind of figuring things out, the defense, the offense. Yeah. There's a lot of people who are going to be on the Detroit Lions next year is that kind of cool pick playoffs. I'm calling it now.
That's one of the easier calls you've ever had. Everyone is going to be like, the team that I think that didn't make the playoffs last year that I think is going to make it this year, I think I'm going to go with the team up at Motown. I think I'm going to go with them. Every single person is going to be saying that.
Hell, that might even be us.
Yes, very well.
Maybe. Maybe they've earned it, but.
Yeah, for good reason.
Everybody loves that team that gets hot late. They always discount the bad start because it's recency bias. We only remember the great last finish.
That's right. And this team more than any other because they got the coach that's always emotional and grindy out there in front of the camera, and they got the ankle-biting team. So, yeah, they're definitely going to be the chic pick for everyone next year.
And the final thing you saw of them was them eliminating the Green Bay Packers.
That's right. That was the last thing everyone saw for the regular season. It was the way they handled the
pack. Last thing that the Lions put on film was that, and showing up in a big spot for them, even though they had just been eliminated from the playoffs. So look for that next year. It happened this year, but it feels like a long time ago. And I hate to pile on your hometown team down there twice, but man, you remember back when the Tennessee Titans were just coasting to a division title?
Oh, those halcyon days.
They had that thing on cruise control right to the finish line and then proceeded to lose their last seven games.
That is falling off the rails if I ever heard of one. That definitely deserves the off the rails. Oh, there goes Tanny. Tanny's ankle just blew up right in front of everybody.
That's okay, because Malik Willis, he was there.
He was there, all right.
He took the controls, and he just rode that thing right off the bridge.
Oh, yeah, that does seem like a long time ago.
So, okay, that's Rich PR Award. one of our favorite awards that we give out here for something stupid that a team either does or something stupid in the public relations avenue. This one to me is really funny because we don't actually know who did this, but what we do know is a team that is notorious for doing really silly things. They did a lot of silly things this year. You pointed it out, a lot. So we don't actually know who the person is who either designed or suggested, created, or then ultimately merchandised this item. But we're going all the way back to week one and the Washington Commanders, who somehow decided to sell from their official merchandise van a mug, a coffee mug, that had the Washington Commanders logo over the state of Washington.
Oops.
And the team tried to downplay it by saying, no. No, it wasn't in the stadium. It was outside. It was outside. So it's not official. And then, of course, pictures of the merchandise and of the van that it was being sold of showed that it was being sold by the official team merchandise truck right outside the stadium. If you haven't seen pictures of this, it's the W. It's the Washington Commanders W imposed over the state of Washington, not Washington, D.C., Washington. And I don't know who designed it. I don't know who all. So it's so hard to give this from a relations standpoint, but just the fact that that made it through all the checks to be sold to the public deserves an award.
And there it is.
If you haven't seen it, look it up. The Washington Commander's Washington mug. It will take you about three. I saw this right back at the beginning of the year. We never talked about it, but Tin Commander's or Washington State Commander's mug, and it is plain as day. There's the coffee mug with the W over the state of Washington. It was confirmed by news stations. People actually bought this thing. How does that exist?
What the hell's going on out here?
Number one, if I asked you which organization is more likely to sell their logo on the entire wrong region of the country, would this not be the organization?
This is the organization. I mean, this jumps over the wireframe Sean Taylor ghost thing. I mean, you think about this whole team should just get the award. This should be an achievement award for the whole season for the public relations of the Washington football team, the Washington Commanders, the Washington Washingtons, whatever the hell you want to call them. But that, to me, is them in a nutshell right there.
And number two, I have an award in which I attempt to encapsulate everything about that franchise, and I forgot about that. I barely remember it happening. It did happen. I do remember it. But I don't even have that in my wrap-up of them because there's so many things. There's so many things.
That's just so perfect, though. That's just chef's kiss when you see your team's logo on the state of Washington, even though you play in Washington, D.C.
Any organization that would do something like that, that's the organization. Not just in football, but in all the sports.
So did you want to give that award or shall I go on? I've got three left.
Go ahead. Finish it out.
Right. Game of the year. Best game, not worst. Don't worry, we'll get to that. best game of the year, you know, Do you know how many people are going to want to give this to either Bills Vikings or Vikings Colts? I'm not giving it to either one of those games because those were just massive comebacks in a season where big leads meant absolutely nothing. I want the best game to be the best game, a game with stakes, a game that you think is going to have meaning. It had meaning at the time it was played. It ended up not having meaning in the long run. But I'm going all the way back to week 6, Bills 24, Chiefs 20, the Bills going to Arrowhead to avenge that loss to Patrick Mahomes. You knew they needed it. They needed this fight. They needed to beat the Chiefs so they could eventually get the home field. They didn't. It ended up not happening. This whole DeMar Hamlin thing happened. The coin toss thing happened. The neutral site. All of that. But at the time, you sort of needed that moment. And that was both of those teams coming up in big ways. Allen and Mahomes both making the big plays. That was the best game of the year.
It was. What I remember about that game, not looking back at my notes, was how tough it was played by both teams. Like, it wasn't pretty,
yes.
But
no.
It was great because you could tell, well, there's a lot of games that, you know, with scores like that where, oh, what a great throw and what a great catch and just flowery offense back and forth. And this wasn't that. This was two teams that were trying to grind this game out, and you could just tell how bad each team wanted to win this game, and the Bills just wanted it just a little bit more. And for the reasons that you mentioned, that they needed to not just avenge the loss last year in the playoffs, but to try to set it up to where they don't have to come back there for the playoffs and win the number one overall seed for the conference. And they knew that was the mission. That's what they set out to do, and they did it, and the Chiefs did all they could to prevent it from happening. Yeah, it was great. It wasn't perfect, and that's sort of what made it perfect in a weird way, was that it wasn't perfect. It wasn't beautiful. It was just, we need this win, and the other team,
yeah,
we need this win, and they both went out there and busted heads and tried to get that W, and it was great football. I don't know if the players could hold up. We talk about health and safety and how hard it was to watch some of these injuries this year. I don't know if players could hold up for 17 games, 14 games, or any games if they all played it like that, if they all played with that kind of intensity and the way that they played that game. But for that one game to have that kind of intensity and to watch those two teams that clearly wanted it, it was great. The hype was off the page for that game, and it lived up to the hype. Again, not because it was great football or just incredibly beautiful, but because you could really tell how bad both teams wanted it. That's what made it great.
Yeah, and you don't get many games in week 6 that play like a playoff football game, you know,
right,
where it had the stakes, it had the tension, like it really felt like you were watching, you knew you were watching the two best teams in the conference playing with real stakes. And I know it's so easy, but we were talking about that back at the time, but it's always easy to be like, well, you know, an injury could happen. But no, at the time, the meaning of that game, and it still ended up being a meaningful game. The Chiefs ended up getting that home field, which they needed. To me was the best game.
Yeah, definitely. No argument here.
Worst game of the year. This one was equally
easy. How do you choose?
This one, no. Worst game of the year. I'm going back to week 5, kicking off the week, Thursday night football, Colts 12, Broncos 9 in overtime. That's the Nathaniel Hackett needs to be fired, the horrible play calling, the going for touchdowns when they only needed field goals. The fans walking out.
Yeah.
That's the game that the fans walked out of, because the Broncos, who physically dominated the Colts for that whole game, lost a game that they entirely should have won. They played stupid. They coached stupid. That defense was world class, and again, torpedoed by that quarterback and sabotaged by their coach. And that was just a hard game to watch. You talked about that Titans-Texans game, right? Some of the worst quarterback play you've ever seen. but I never saw a game where the home fans walked out when the game was still in doubt. Because they were so disgusted. They were so disgusted with the coaching and the quarterbacking and the offense of that team that they had seen enough. That's some smart fans right there. Like, screw you guys, I'm going home. You know, I don't need any free football. Nope, I'm leaving. That, to me, worst game of the year. One of the worst games I've ever seen.
Screw you guys, I'm going home.
We don't know how many times it's happened because they don't normally put the cameras on the crowd when overtime hits. But for some reason, the producer of that game decided, hey, we need to look at the stands right now because these people are done. They're through with this shit. They're leaving. So I don't know how many times it's happened, but in this one, it happened and it was justified because it was some very ugly football. I still think it's a very tough choice for worst game of the year. Like I said, that Texans. Titans game, anything involving Jeff Saturday is a candidate.
That was fun.
That's fun, bad.
Yeah, man. How great is this? Which is shocking because in my framework, I don't have an award for Jeff Saturday. So I hope you do.
Don't worry. I got you.
Thank you. But that to me was the worst game of the year. That's the one that stood out to me. It wasn't the non-game game, the game that was never played, any of the Jeff Saturday shenanigans, because that was just that was more humorous than it was just bad.
It was also bad.
This game was bad. There's no redeeming qualities about that game at all. Decision-making, play, everything about it was just god-awful, and that to me was definitely that didn't take more than 10 seconds to be like, nope, that's the worst game of the year. Once it happened, it set the bar so high, nothing else jumped over it. Sometimes that's just the way it goes. The Grammy for acting.
Yeah.
The Antonio Brown Award, the Antonio Brown's Grammy, basically fake it till you make it award. Who did the best acting job this year? That's the Minnesota Vikings. I'm giving it to the whole damn team. The Minnesota Vikings put on, they get the Grammy for making people really believe and think that that team, that 13-4 team with the negative point differential, could amount to something. They deserve it. That'll get the whole team up on stage and hand pass that Grammy around and everybody can hold it up in the air because nobody acted like contenders more than those big frauds, the Minnesota Vikings. They get the whole team gets the award.
Yeah, the Grammys on right now, don't they?
I think you're right.
Maybe Antonio Brown is there, ready to hand out the Grammy to the Vikings. I got them covered too. I can't even remember which award, but I got the Vikings covered.
That's okay.
I got a lot of things covered.
Cause I'm done. That's always my final award. So, you know, we got you, left you, usually end up leaving you about 45 minutes. So you've got about 45 minutes left to bounce off some of yours. And I know you've got the ones that you always have that are the set ones. And I'm sure you've got some ones that you just had to sneak in because of all the awfulness and goodness sometimes that we had this year. So I now turn the floor over to you and I will comment as I need to.
Oh, thank you very much. Always fun to listen to Jay's awards for the first half of the show, and I'll take over for the last half. I do have the Vikings somewhere. I'm trying to figure out where, but I got this stuff sort of numbered. I'm trying to follow along. I always wind up stumbling and bumbling and messing up, but I get through it eventually, and hopefully it'll be entertaining for those of you who are still listening. I get started with my handful of awards set awards that I give out every year. I covered the shit and the drizzling shits. I have Coach of the Year awards. I do it. I do everything a little differently, but I do Coach of the Year a little differently. I believe Super Bowl winning coaches should be held to a higher standard. So I have four coach awards. I have Coach of the Year for Super Bowl winning coaches. And Coach of the Year for non-Super Bowl winning coaches. And then I have Worst Coach of the Year for Super Bowl winning coaches and non-Super Bowl winning coaches. My Coach of the Year in the non-Super Bowl winning category. to no one's surprise, because everyone knows the man love that I have for him, for the second year in a row, my coach of the year in the non-Super Bowl category, is Kyle Shanahan of the San Francisco 49ers. And anyone who has a problem with that, I just want to say, take whoever your favorite coach is and hand them their third string starting quarterback and tell me if they make it to their conference championship game. Because I'm going to say
win,
no.
And win seven games in a row.
And runs off an undefeated streak to end the regular season with that third string quarterback.
Yes.
Who else is going to do that? I don't think anyone else is going to do that. Only Kyle Shanahan, with his scheming, with his coaching, and also with his talent around him. I don't want to sugarcoat it. He's doing a hell of a job with Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. They bring in this Christian McCaffrey guy of running back. He's pretty good. So that helps out a lot as well, having that talent. But there's plenty of coaches that have had really good talent on their side and haven't done what they've done, what Kyle Shanahan has done with this team, with Brock Purdy. And before that, last year, with Jimmy Garoppolo. Let's not forget that he was doing great things with Jimmy Garoppolo, including being in the lead in a Super Bowl with 10 minutes to go with Jimmy Garoppolo as quarterback. That's no small feat either. I don't want that to get overshadowed. But this is all about this year. Coach of the year for this year, again, is Kyle Shanahan. I just don't see anyone else doing more with less than Kyle Shanahan when you talk about the quarterback position. I don't see Brock Purdy being a great quarterback anywhere else, and I don't see Jimmy Garoppolo being a great quarterback anywhere else, but only here under Kyle Shanahan. So that's my coach of the year for the second year in a row. My coach of the year amongst all Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. You know, there's three teams before the season began, that decided for whatever their reasons to deal their number one Pro Bowl caliber all-world wide receivers. The Green Bay Packers did that. They didn't make the playoffs. The Tennessee Titans did that. They didn't make the playoffs. The Kansas City Chiefs did that, and they have the number one passing game in the league, and oh, by the way, they're in the Super Bowl. So my coach of the year amongst all Super Bowl winning quarterbacks is Andy Reid with the Kansas City Chiefs, who was in position to win another Super Bowl if he can beat the Philadelphia Eagles next Sunday. So we'll know at this time next Sunday night if Andy Reid will have his second Super Bowl championship. But number one, I still can't kind of believe that number one passing game in the league. Patrick Mahomes is awesome. He's one of the greatest of all time. But that's coaching too. That's not just Pat Mahomes deciding to make these mishmash of receivers and surrounding Travis Kelce into the number one passing game in the league after you deal Tyreek Hill. That's also coaching. That's Andy Reid. That's Eric Bieniemy. That's the entire offensive staff. And that Buffalo game that we just mentioned, they survived that. They lost that game of the year to the Buffalo Bills. They could have went in the tank. They could have said, okay, we got beat. Now the Bills have the upper hand for home field throughout the playoffs. Let's just kind of take it slow from here, and hopefully we can just win our division and sneak into the playoffs and host a wild card weekend. Nope, they kept fighting. They kept grinding away and made themselves, again, the number one passing offense in the entire NFL after trading one of the great wide receivers in the league, Tyreek Hill. After that, I still don't know how the hell they did that. So my coach of the year among Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, Andy Reid, incredible job in Kansas City.
Yeah, especially the way that you highlight it, because they really just slapped that offense together every week. We talk about fantasy, but that team was fantasy like just poison this whole season, because every
Travis
week
Kelce
was,
and guys.
Yeah, every week it was somebody else. Who's it going to be? Is it going to be McKinnon? Is it going to be Pacheco? Is it going to be MVS? Is it going to be Juju? Is this the Juju week? Who's it going to be? You know, they just keep – Justin Watson's going to have a game, you know.
Who?
Noah Gray. They're just going to – everybody contributed. Everybody made plays. And, like, when you talk about these other teams, like, this is what I thought Aaron Rodgers could do. Like, hey, you can take away that guy because he's just going to make everybody better. It didn't happen.
Not if you're a weirdo and you don't trust anybody on your team. But Mahomes is not in that category.
Yeah, it also helps that Mahomes is, 27 and athletic, and, you know, and Rodgers is basically just cash and retirement checks at this point.
So my worst coach of the year amongst the non-Super Bowl winning coaches.
Man.
Ooh, boy.
You got some contenders for this one.
So you correctly looked at how terrible it was going in the Rocky Mountains. And you said this guy was so bad, they're going to have to get rid of him before the season's over. And I was like, really? He's that bad? Yeah. He was that bad. So everything was going terrible in Denver right off the bat. Nathaniel Hackett showing a breathtaking ability to screw up the simplest things and apparently just completely over his head, over his skis. Everything about his coaching made it seem like he didn't know what he was doing. He had to bring in specialists to help him out. It seemed like every week there was a new guy added to the coaching staff to help him with the simplest of tasks. And finally, the Broncos had to call it a day and fire it. The standard for that being set last year with Urban Meyer, like to be on that level that an organization admits before your first season is even over, like this isn't working and you have to leave. This is terrible that they did that. They absolutely had to make that call and get Nathaniel Hackett out of there before his first season was even over. And then the Indianapolis Colts have to get rid of their coach, and they didn't have to, but they decided to.
No. Yeah.
To get rid of Frank Reich. And Jim Irsay decides to replace him with Jeff Saturday, whose coaching experience consisted of high school football. To say it didn't go well would be an understatement. He won his first game out of the box and lost every game after that in worse and worse fashion, in more incredible fashion. The man managed to have twin 33-point embarrassments. He had a quarter where his team gave up 33 points to the Dallas Cowboys and lost a game that they were contending in the fourth quarter and got completely blown out by the end because whatever a coach is supposed to do to stop a snowball from rolling downhill and becoming an avalanche, Jeff Saturday didn't know how to do that. And if you thought that was a fluke, he came back, went up to Minnesota and showed once again he has no idea how to stop a snowball from becoming an avalanche. And a 33-point lead in that one, 33-0, and you lose. How do you lose a game you're leading 33-0? I couldn't determine between those two terrible coaching jobs. My worst coach of the year out of non-Super Bowl winning coaches is a tie. It's Nathaniel
both
Hackett and
yeah.
it's Jeff Saturday.
Yeah.
They were both awful.
Yeah, I mean, I was on the Hackett thing, I think, after like week two. It was so bad. And then that game I just talked about, that week five Thursday night game, was sort of like that was when I went full anti, like, this guy's got to go. This thing is terrible. Fire him right now. I've seen enough. And every week it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. But he was hired on merit, and he was fired on merit. And that's what makes it shocking, because you think about these first-year coaches that get the boot or first-year coaches team like Bobby Petrino did, you know, or what Urban Meyer had happened where, you know, his owner tells him he's got to be a better human being. No, Nathaniel Hackett just got fired in his for just being bad at coaching. He wasn't a bad guy. He wasn't feeling up co-eds. He wasn't doing any of that stuff. He was just awful at coaching, head coaching, professional football, and got himself fired at not even before the end of his first full year. But Jeff Saturday, he'd probably be excited about, man, I'm just so blessed to get this award and to be recognized for everything I contributed. Man, how about that? That comeback, man, was that great? Oh, I'm going to miss Jeff Saturday.
We might not have a chance to miss him. Jim Irsay is a fucking moron. He might bring him back.
It could happen. It could happen.
After seeing that performance, he might hire him as his full-time permanent coach.
He might want the number one pick in the draft next year.
That'd be a good way to get it.
Yes.
My worst coach of the year amongst Super Bowl winning coaches, the GOAT, Bill Belichick. Mm. What did you think was going to happen assigning Matt Patricia as that with a pencil behind his ear, as the offensive coordinator, de facto offensive. What did you think was going to work out? Mac Jones wanted to strangle Matt Patricia before the season ended. He was so angry at the lack of coaching that he was getting on that sideline from Matt Patricia. Whatever progress that Mac Jones may have made in his rookie year last year, it went away this year. He regressed big time, and you have to think it's because of the lack of coaching. And you can't put that at anyone's feet but Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick is the man who made that decision to bring his buddy back after he flamed out as the coach of the Lions. And bring him back on your coaching staff, that's completely understandable. Bringing him back and assigning him to basically be the offensive coordinator and play caller, like what? And he's got no experience at doing that? That's some arrogance. I don't want to crash on the GOAT because he's the GOAT coach, but that's just arrogant to say that I'm going to bring back Matt Patricia and he's going to run the offense because I decide that he's going to do that because I think he's good enough to do that. No, he's not, and everyone knew he wasn't, and everyone saw it in preseason that it was going to be a disaster, and it was indeed a disaster. And it ruined, really, a decent effort by the Patriots defense. They could have snuck into the playoffs with some offensive output, but not with Matt Patricia running things. So that's, unfortunately, my worst coach amongst the Super Bowl-winning coaches.
Yeah, Bill Belichick's clearly, he's got his guys. And he's very loyal to his guys, and he's always been he's brought these guys back, and you know he brought back McDaniels after that whole thing failed, and he's brought back Patricia after he was ass clown with the Lions, and I'll give that to him, but yeah, he's putting people in positions that they shouldn't be, and maybe he's believing his own press because he's the GOAT coach. I'm not going to take that away from him, but yeah. It's a different story these last, not say a couple seasons, because last year I'd say he did an all right job, but this Matt Patricia thing doesn't work, and that's all on Belichick.
That's right. Loyalty, you can be loyal to a fault sometimes.
Yes.
My Heckle and Jide Award, and I know I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, but I do it on purpose in honor of Dan Hampton, goes to the player or team that drives me the most crazy with their inconsistency throughout the season. And for me this year, your boy Matty Ice in Indianapolis, I understand how terrible he was. He got himself benched several times. In between getting benched, he had four different games with over 100 passer rating, and he had three 300-yard games. That guy, the same guy that was so bad, he found himself benched twice. In Indianapolis by two different coaches. And he earned getting benched because he was when he was bad, he was terrible. But when he was good, he was pretty damn good. It's like, what do we got here? What is he going to revert back to being the old Matt Ryan? Is he still got something in him, or is he completely finished? He looked completely finished at times, and he also looked like he had something left at times. There was no in-between with Matt Ryan this year, and it drove me insane because it was already tough trying to pick Colts games anyway with their top running back being in and out of the lineup and ultimately having to sit the rest of the year. But the inconsistency of quarterback did not help things at all. And then, add on top of that, the worst coach, tied for the worst coach of the year in Jeff Saturday. That didn't make things any better. But Matty Ice, Heckle and Jide, are you still – you got something or you don't? We don't know.
I still don't know, and I don't know how much of that was the coaching – or the situation. Obviously it doesn't help having Taylor gone. There are good receivers. There's some talent at the wide receiver position, good tight ends on that team, typically usually a good offensive line, although it doesn't matter how good your offensive line is because Matt Ryan will always take a sack on every crucial third down. He's the turtle. He's the human turtle. That's all he's ever going to do, and he's always been that way. Remembrance of Matt Ryan this season was when he ripped off that huge run against the Raiders, and that was like the moment when the Raiders quit because he's running faster than the DBs that are trying to catch him, and this is like old man Matt Ryan. Like, you could just see the quit. You could see the moment that the Raiders quit when they're letting Matt Ryan run past them. Like, oh man, he's not going to go. Well, oh, he's going. Oh, let me lightly jog after him. That's the only play I really remember from this season for Matt Ryan, because it was so funny because I was watching and that was the one game Jeff Saturday won.
That was it. Yeah, we don't want to be prejudiced or racially insensitive, but we also want to keep it real here. Under no circumstance should Matt Ryan be running past 20-something-year-old black cornerbacks in the NFL. That just should never happen.
No, and it happened.
It did.
I remember I think we gave that an award. One of us did.
Very well may have. My Kerry Krieger Memorial Heartbreak Award, named after the woman who broke my heart, 20-something years ago now. You would think it would – I think I always wind up giving it to the team that I picked to win the Super Bowl the year, you know, before the season begins, and then they don't win
it.
So it would be very easy for me to give it to the Baltimore Ravens. I'm going to give them a pass. I think some more bad injury luck. You know, their quarterback, you don't know where his head is or where his body is.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to the team that you picked to win the Super Bowl that broke your heart, the Buffalo Bills. It felt like everybody thought that this was their year. It felt like this is it, that everything is leading towards this season being it. The big win in Kansas City, once again, we bring up the game of the year, where it seemed like they sort of took that next step to announce themselves as the team to beat. And it just doesn't work out for them. They had me convinced after that game that they were the team, that they were the best team in the league. And then the Mar Hamlin thing happened. They had me convinced there that it was their time, because I thought they were going to have this emotional boost now of they get him back in the stadium, they get him back, after he started recovering and started feeling better. I knew they were going to get him back in the stadium at some point. I didn't know which game it was going to be, and it wound up being the Bengals game in the snowstorm. And I just thought, this is the moment. This is the perfect moment. You got the weather. You got the fans going crazy. You got DeMar up there throwing up the heart sign. You got his family in the booth and everything. And the Bills just did not – they didn't match the moment. They didn't answer the situation that was kind of set up perfectly for them. And again, looking back in hindsight, maybe it was a little too much. Maybe it was asking too much to ask that team to come back from the emotional boost of seeing DeMar Hamlin finally make it back and then turn around and take out the Bengals and do what they had to do and be aggressive. They didn't seem like the aggressor in that game. They didn't seem like they had the same juice and the same gusto that the Bengals did. The Bengals took it to the Bills, and the Bills – they didn't have the answer. Their reservoir was empty at that point. So they broke their fans' hearts. They broke your hearts, and they kind of broke my heart, because I thought it was set up for them. I thought everything was laid out for them to perfectly go on through and do what they had to do and win the title this year. And maybe they recover and put it all together next year, but I don't know how many years they're going to have their window open. They're not an old team, but they're not young either. So Buffalo Bills, when are you going to do it? When are you going to put it all together? We're all waiting for you.
Yeah, you'd like to see them. I mean, I'd love to see them at least get to one here. Get there.
Right.
Because it's a good team, and it's a fun team. And, you know, Josh Allen, great quarterback, had a really rough second half, being really loose with the football. And, yeah, they ran into a hungrier, nastier team than them in the playoffs. And Cincinnati man, nobody's going to want to be running into Cincinnati in the playoffs in these years coming. Because even if you win, you're going to earn it.
It looks like it's setting up to be about 4 or 5, 6 years of Bills and Chiefs and Bengals just kind of punching each other in the nuts over and over again to see who's going to come out of the AFC. So it's compelling. Certainly going to be interesting to see which one of those teams goes all the way and wins the title. It might be the Chiefs once again this year. Name of the year, I don't give this away every year, but if a name comes along, a new name comes in the league that I think is worthy of a name of the year award, I'll give out the award, and got to go with Dicker the Kicker. Cameron Dicker, the place kicker for the LA Chargers. Just the perfect name, man. Dicker the Kicker. Just get out there and do your thing, because you're Dicker the Kicker. 95% field goals this year, led all kickers, so he earned the name, he earned the nickname, and he earned his spot on the team. And I like it, because I imagine he probably gets a lot of ladies with that name. Just, hey, I'm Dicker the Kicker. Let me take you back and show you why they call me Dicker the Kicker. So I like
Dicker.
The name.
I hardly know her.
Yeah, I should have anticipated you going there.
But then he misses the one he needed the most.
Oh, yeah. Well, he wasn't perfect, unfortunately, but he was pretty damn good. So good on Digger the Kicker. We'll see how much of a future he has in the league. From there, we start to get into some of my awards that are specifically for this year. The ultimate lifetime love of the game award can't be anyone other than Tom Brady.
Man, he's got to love the game.
He's no one could possibly love it. Think about all the legends of football, the Jim Brown, Walter Payton, Rice, Montana, Peyton Manning, Dion, just Elway, name them all. Nobody, none of those people ever have looked a supermodel in the face and said, go to hell. I heart football more than you do. None of them ever did that. Only Tom Brady looked a supermodel in the face and said, nah, I'm going to keep playing. We remember when the rumors started coming out that Giselle had given him an ultimatum and said, okay, there's enough football. You got to retire now or else I'm getting a divorce. And it didn't take him long to answer that ultimatum, because about 5.5 minutes after we saw the rumors about Giselle putting out that ultimatum, we saw the news being put across that Giselle was getting a divorce, had started the proceedings to get the divorce. So
yeah,
Brady gave her his answer. Nobody loves football more than Tom Brady. And he did all that for the privilege to lose 31-14 to the Dallas Cowboys in the wild card round.
Yeah.
So if that's what you wanted out of life, then you got it, my friend. But congratulations, I guess.
And what was even better was after, I think, the game after it was announced that they were getting divorced, they get blowed out by the Carolina Panthers.
Yes.
You gave it up for this.
I know I gave an award that week. You gave up a supermodel to go get your ass busted in Charlotte, North Carolina by the Carolina Panthers. That's what you want. Okay.
Well, he says he's gone this time.
Sure. Announcing his retirement on the exact same date that he announced it last year. If you really are done, don't you wait to choose a different date than the exact same date that you did this last year? Like, don't you want to give that some separation? I don't know.
So that's why I tweeted out that he should be doing this every year on April 1st.
Ha-ha, I'm retired again. Ha-ha. See if you believe me now. We'll all find out week one. That's the only time I'll believe it.
Might not even be week one. It could be week six, and all of a sudden somebody's hurt. Phone calls going out. What about Tom Brady? Yeah.
Free agent Tom Brady at age 46 or 7 or whatever he would be at the time.
Yeah, somebody will do it. That phone's going to ring.
That phone will definitely ring. Hopefully he's not going to answer it. The Missing Piece Award, speaking of the Buffalo Bills, go to the Bills because they thought that they were – this is what happens sometimes when you think you got all the pieces set up and you think everything is in perfect place. They thought the finishing touch on their roster was just, all we need to do is add a punter. All we got to do – that's all we're missing is a decent punter. Hey, look, we look in the draft and there's this guy. He's so good. We call him the punt guy, Matt Araiza.
I forgot about him. I'm glad you remembered him.
We always bring out something that the other one forgets. First pick of the sixth round, they get the punt guy, Matt Araiza. Now, why is he available at the top of the sixth round if he's the punt guy? He might have gone a little earlier, except there's this small thing hanging over his head called a gang rape allegation by a 17-year-old when he was at San Diego State University. I don't know how the Bills thought they were going to get away with sneaking him through the process and not having this come out as a PR thing. We know that they're allergic to the PR thing because not long after he got drafted, the girl decided to file a civil suit against him. And about 5 seconds after that, the Bills cut him. And that was the end of the punt guy in Buffalo. Now, for any male chauvinist pigs, I might want to go and say, how do we really know that this was, do we know that he really raped, he really was involved? Maybe it was just some unfair situation. Well, here's the deal. Zero other teams picked up punt guy. He's still out there. He's still a free agent. Nobody else wanted to have anything to do with him. The Bills didn't have to draft him. He would have been undrafted. He could have done this under the table after the draft was over. But no, they thought hey, we're the Buffalo Bills. We got everything in place. All we need is a punter. We're going to reach and take this guy. He's the punt god. No one's going to care about the background. You know, that's just an allegation. There's nothing to worry about there. There's no charges pending or anything like that. We're not going to worry about them. And as soon as she files a civil suit, I don't think this is going to work out. We're going to have to get rid of him. So, bad move by the Bills right there. They thought they had the finishing touches, but it wasn't meant to be with a punt god.
Well, it's also easy to cut a six-round pick.
It is, but they should have never drafted him. They should have never even went down that road. My wiener dog of the year goes to Zach Wilson, the quarterback of the New York Jets, who was accused by an ex-girlfriend before the season of banging his mother's best friend, which rallied the Pornhub section of social media around him. Oh, that's our guy. He loves the MILFs. He's got that dog in him. Yeah. Apparently it's a wiener dog that he's got in him. That's all he has. He needs to put the wiener away and focus on football. That's his problem right now. Here's what having a dog in him resulted in on the field for Zach Wilson. Get your barf bag out. 9 games due to injury and inconsistency and bad play. Only played in 9 games. 54.5 completion percentage, which we always have to point out was pretty good back in like 1984, but absolutely sucks in today's game. 6 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and a 72.8 passer rating. Don't worry about the MILFs. Get back on the field. Maybe it should have been a Chihuahua of the year. Maybe that's the dog that I was looking at. If he's got that dog in him, maybe it's a little yippy Chihuahua dog or a Shih Tzu or something. Because
a shit something.
Yeah.
A shit sandwich. Those are barely better than Malik Willis's stats.
He was bad.
He was bad. I thought about giving him least valuable player.
He had some throws where are you throwing that ball? Why are you throwing it out there? There's nobody out there. And he did it consistently in just about every game. He had a scenario or two or three where he had throws that he could have easily completed somewhere else. And instead, he either throws it completely away from everybody or he throws it right to the other team. It's like, what is going on with himself? He's got a long way to go to get over the MILF thing and also to get over his terrible play. So we'll see if he ever improves that. The All In with Deuces Award goes to John Robinson, the ex-GM of the Tennessee Titans. He went all in, and all he had was a pair of deuces. He went all in because he didn't want to pay wide receiver A.J. Brown, so he deals him at the draft to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah.
And then he drafts his replacement, Treylon Burks, who was hurt and ineffective. And then in week 13, Robinson has to watch A.J. Brown just take it out and put it all over the Tennessee Titans. He just physically dominated them. He embarrassed them. He's shoving the cornerbacks down and mossing them, making catches over their head. And the Eagles whoop the Titans 35-10, just drub them. And the very next day, John Robinson gets shit canned. That's called going all in, making that trade, and all you got is a pair of deuces. And you watch the board hit, and here come all these aces, and the other guy's got an ace, and you're just completely up shit's creek without a paddle. John Robinson, all in, and busted, and he's now out.
Yeah, I remember giving him the award the week that happened for having the worst week, because not only did A.J. Brown crap all over them, Treylon Burks got hurt in that game.
Oh, that's right. He sure did.
I think that's the game he got KTFO'd in the end zone and still held on to the ball, though.
He went to sleep in the end zone, but he held on to the ball. So at least he's got that. He's got a touchdown. He doesn't remember he's got a touchdown, but at least he has a touchdown. From there, the Run Like the Cops or Your Old Coaches Behind You Award goes to Justin Fields, the Bears quarterback. Man, he was running his ass off all over. He was so afraid of Matt Nagy coming back out to coach him that he just kept running, just run and run and run. He threatened to set the quarterback single-season rushing record of Lamar Jackson, who had 1,206 yards a few years ago, and he came a little short. He had to settle for 1,143, but that's still a hell of an effort by Justin Fields. Amazing what happens when you have a coach who actually knows how to use your skills and actually tries to formulate game plans around what you do best. Incredible. So kudos for Justin Fields, and all Bears fans around the world are very excited about what's coming next with Justin Fields and the number one draft pick.
Yeah, those Bears games were fun watches because they had dealt away all their defensive pieces, so they were a shell of themselves on the defensive side of the ball. But that mid-season 4 or 5 week run that Justin Fields went on when he was fully healthy, you know, that the Detroit game, the Dolphins game, are just two of them that stand out to me right away. Some of the most just fun that you could have, you know, watching someone playing at that position, you know, just it was another level of like Lamar Jackson and what he was able to do. And a lot of it was just plant and run, but still, it was really fun to watch, and it was even more fun to have him in fantasy.
I'm sure it was. A lot of people made a lot of money off of Justin Fields. I'm sure,
I made me some money with Justin Fields this year.
There you go. The Running with the Devil Award goes to the Los Angeles Rams, who clearly sold their soul to the devil last year to win the Super Bowl. And everything fell apart. Everything fell apart for them this year. Matthew Stafford fell apart. Cooper Kupp fell apart. Aaron Donald fell apart. They stumble and bumble their way to a 5-12 record and have to run through speculation once again that their coach, Sean McVay, was going to retire at such a young age and give all this up and go to TV, which he decided to come back for one more year to coach this. So. Best of luck next year, but don't expect any draft help because you pretty much gave away all your picks to win that title.
Have you ever seen something so silly with such a young coach that you have to have even begin to have talk about this? Like you're a Super Bowl winning coach, you're a supposed genius. What you win a Super Bowl, you win one Super Bowl. Oh, that's it, guys. You know, deuces. I'm out of here. You know, come on.
It's a different time, Jay. When we were younger, those coaches didn't have that opportunity to just leave and go take millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars in TV money. But now you don't have to sit there and coach for 30, 40, 50 years like Tom Landry. You can get that one title early. Basically, John Madden, I think, set the template for that. Like he won his title with the Raiders very early and got out before, you know, the stress completely killed him. And then he spent 30 years on television. So if you think you're the next John Madden and you want to get out and give it a shot, then there's so much money for you. I don't blame you at all. I don't blame Sean McVay if he did sit it down and go take that TV money. There's just so much money out there for you now. Tom Brady's going to get that TV money as if he needs it.
Right. And most of these coaches, though, just take that TV job as that in-between gig between coaching jobs, you know, or it's the rehabilitation tour. And then you can go get your next coaching job.
Yeah, a lot of guys do that, but I think Bill Cowher now has set the template for, I'm going to take this job and pretend like I'm waiting for the next job, but then I'm going to turn back to the TV networks and make them drive up their price and just, you want to keep me? You can give me a little bit more, or else I'll go coach again and keep that going.
And the unfortunate side effect of that is how just massive these desks get for these pregame shows now that you have to have like 7 guys sitting at the desk. Come on.
We got 5 guys here. We got 4 other guys out at the stadium, and then we got 3 other guys in another studio. Yeah.
And our 2 insiders. It's like, no,
we
don't need that. It makes you miss just Berman and TJ.
It's going to be like a Wu-Tang Clan concert on some of these shows. The WTF of the year. I'm not going to do of the year for all of our normal weekly awards. I don't have smartest of the year, but I felt like I had to do a WTF
give a Danielle
of the year because there's so many WTFs. There's so many times that made you go WTF, but this one I think needed a special award by itself because of all the WTFs. Nobody WTF more than Jacoby Myers, Week 15, Patriots at Raiders. All time doing too much moment. All time. With no time left on the clock, he decides in a tie game, we're doing the pitchy-pitchy woo-woo. We're going all over the field, and we're deciding what we want to do, but – it's a tie game. So if you don't have anything available going downfield, you can just lay down and go to overtime. And he decides, nah, I don't want to do that, man. He decides to turn all the way around and throw the ball 20-some yards in the air backwards towards his quarterback, Mac Jones, who's standing there going, I can't do anything with this ball. Why is he throwing this to me? I can't even we've already thrown a forward pass. I can't throw it forward again. Why are you throwing this back to me? And as it turned out, Mac Jones didn't have to do anything because he helplessly watched Chandler Jones, the former New England Patriot and current Raider, run up under the ball and pick off the interception, which it was a lateral pass, so it technically wasn't an interception. Statistically, in the book, it's a fumble recovery. But whatever you want to call it, Chandler Jones gets under the ball, gets the ball. Nothing left at that point for Mac Jones to do but to try to make the tackle. He's the only person between the end of the game and going to overtime. And unfortunately for him, he was not able to make that tackle. And that was the end
Chandler
of the game.
Jones put him in his grave on that stiff arm.
Yeah, he absolutely did. Mac Jones had no chance to do anything about that. That was absolutely the WTF of the year. Jacoby Myers, why the fuck would you turn around and throw that ball?
When the Finns ran the hook and lateral to beat the Patriots several years ago. Now on a 3rd and 10, 3 seconds left. Jones will give it to Stevenson. He started right. He runs it up the middle, hit by Chandler. Jones slips and hit across the 45 with a stiff arm. Off a tackle at the 40. He lost the football. And Jacoby Myers picks it up. He circles back and he throws it across the field toward Mac Jones.
God.
It's picked up by Chandler Jones. He breaks away to the 30. He runs to the 20. He runs to the 10. He runs to the end zone. Unreal. Touchdown. Raiders.
Good night. This might be one of the dumbest teams I've ever seen.
And a victory for Las Vegas.
I don't know what to say.
Nobody knew what to say. Danielle knew what to say.
Winning the game 72-71.
All the WTFs. That was the WTF of the year.
It's an all-timer. Right there. And those announcers, the TV announcers.
Yeah.
You know, when you just hear the guy on the radio go, oh, my God. I mean, you don't usually hear that from a broadcaster, but he was just stunned. I always like to point out on that the announcer, when Stevenson laterals it, says, he lost the football. Like, he was just so sure that Ramondre Stevenson had fumbled. Not that why on earth would he, you know, lateral that to a guy standing right by the side. Oh, and then Jacoby Myers just, you know, the adrenaline gets to you. It's like, oh, we're going to pitch this thing around. And yeah, he threw a really pretty ball.
Right to the other team. So you get all those
Chandler Jones.
Blame Ramondre Stevenson for starting all of that off because he should have probably never
pitched it. Just go down.
He never pitched it to Myers in the first place. From there, I have an award for the new Google research champ. And last year would be Karen Rogers researching the coronavirus a couple of years ago. But I got a new champ. It's Lamar Jackson, the Dr. MD of the Ravens, Lamar Jackson. Who declared on January 12th in a tweet, hang on, I want to read this directly. I want to make sure I'm quoting him specifically. This is my audio-visual reading Lamar Jackson's direct quote on January 12th.
Dr. Lamar.
Thank you, everyone, for your support and concerns regarding my injuries. I want to give you all an update as I am in the recovery process. I've suffered a PCL grade 2 sprain on the borderline of a strain 3. There is still inflammation surrounding my knee, and my knee remains unstable. I'm still in good spirits as I continue with treatments on the road to recovery. I wish I could be out there with my guys more than anything, but I can't give a 100% of myself to my guys and fans. I'm still hopeful we still have a chance. Number one, congratulations to his girlfriend, who I'm sure tweeted that out for him because there's no grammatical errors or misspellings, so that couldn't have been him. Number two, has anybody on the Ravens doctor's staff ever verified any of this diagnosis? Has anyone professionally ever backed up this diagnosis of Lamar Jackson's knee? Because I haven't heard anybody except Lamar Jackson declare that he's got a PCL grade 2 sprain on the borderline of a strain 3, whatever the fuck that's supposed to mean. Nobody else has said that. The Ravens have all said, you know, we're waiting for him to come back and we're hopeful he's going to get on the field. Michael Vick basically intimated Lamar needs to just strap it up and play, which I'm not 100% behind that, but the point is a lot of people think that Lamar is just kind of jaking this and going along trying to string this out because he's going to be a free agent and he doesn't want to risk any more injury, and I think that's probably what's going on too. But man, that looks like it's headed toward a nasty divorce, because you don't ever see that. You don't see guys out there making their own diagnoses on Twitter and the medical staff of the team doesn't back them up or say anything at all. They're just standing back there going, yeah, let him say whatever he wants. We just going to sit back here and watch him. So the Dr. Lamar Jackson, MD, for the new Google research champ.
Yeah, he definitely, WebMD for the win.
Yes. Absolutely. From there, the Luck of the Nordic Irish Award goes to, those Minnesota Vikings. You didn't know there were Nordic Irish up there in Minnesota. But they had some luck going on for them. They managed 13 wins despite being -3 in point differential for the season. 13-4, but you gave up more points than you gained. How in the hell did you do that? 9 games over 500, but you're 3 points. How? Well, here's how you do it. All but 2 of your wins were by one possession, and then all of your L's were by double digits. Every last one of them. But hey, in the playoffs, in the wild card round, they only lost to the Giants by 7, so they got that.
Oh,
they got that going for them.
They can ride that momentum in the next season.
That's right. just like the Lions riding their momentum from the Packers win. All the way into next year. The Big Heart, Little Heart Award goes to DeMar Hamlin and the NFL, because clearly somebody in this situation has a big heart. DeMar Hamlin has the biggest heart of them all. And somebody's got a very little heart and no heart at all, and that's the league. That's the NFL. I don't know all about the situation. I don't know if it's Roger Goodell or any other officials. I don't know who, but somebody – has no heart, because somebody indicated to the broadcast crew of that Buffalo-Cincinnati game Monday night, week 17, that the game was going to continue after a warm-up period. And as I said at the time, all you got to do is go back and watch the tape when that announcement was being made by Joe Buck. At that time, Joe Burrow is starting to warm up, and he's not just tossing the ball lightly. He's like getting loose, like he's really getting into it and getting warm, because clearly somebody told him, hey, you better get loose. We're about to play again. I don't know how, but we're about to start this game up again. And the look on Joe Burrow's face while he's trying to warm up, like, we're really? We're about to restart this? Dude almost died out here. We don't know. At that time, they didn't know. Nobody knew exactly what was going on with DeMar Hamlin outside of the, you know, that his heart stopped and he had to be revived. Nobody knew anything else. But the league was going to make that decision to make it Owen Hart all over again. That was the initial reaction. It was, you know, just like Vince McMahon when Owen Hart dropped to his death. Send him out there. Show's got to go on. Send the wrestlers out and keep going. Keep the show going. And big hole in the corner of the ring where Owen Hart's body made a dent and broke the ring. Work around that. Keep going. Show must go on. They were going to do that. They were actually going to do that. So big heart to DeMar Hamlin, biggest heart in the league, and no one can ever take that away from him. No heart to the NFL for what they were trying to do.
No, I agree with you. We talked about it when it happened. It was the whole thing was a mess, and then the aftermath of that, taking 5 more days yet to figure out what they're going to do and how things are going to work out. And, that whole situation, the players and the teams, I think, all handled that exceptionally, and the league did nothing but shit all over itself.
The league, the teams and the players, the players and the organization and the coaches were the grown-ups in that situation. The league was not, absolutely not.
Right.
We're in the after show for those who are listening by podcast, which is probably most of you. So we got I only got a few more awards. I'm not going too much longer. The Who Says Crime Doesn't Pay award goes to Deshaun Watson. He had so many varied sexual assault accusations that led to him not playing last year with the Houston Texans, and they paid him not to play. They kept paying him, and they just said, we're going to deactivate him every year. Then the trade to Cleveland in the offseason after the Browns agreed to give him a 5-year, $230 million fully guaranteed contract. And the result of that is possibly going to lead to Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and Project all scheduling multiple massages coming up in the next couple of years. Because apparently that's the way to get the guaranteed money in the NFL.
It was not the best way to set the market. And I hate that you're seeing this being used as a ploy, but the Texans did it. I mean, not the Texans, but the Browns did it, and they gave them all that guaranteed money, and for no reason. They were probably it was so useless, and now you're going to see this just used as a trick to get all these other guys more money, and you're Lamar Jackson, who's obviously just repping for himself. He's his doctor too. He's his agent and his doctor.
Busy.
And, I don't know how he's just hurt because he wears so many hats.
That's right. But all those other guys, how can you look Joe Burrow in the face after all he's done in his career and say, you don't deserve your contract fully guaranteed like
right.
Deshaun Watson got? Come on. You're not Deshaun Watson. We can't do that for you. Terrible.
No, and unfortunately, the showdown that it sets up with these teams and with these players is it's not a good precedent, and he didn't deserve it. And there's a lot of people who don't think he should even be playing professional football, and mm-hmm. Or should have had to have sat out for at least more than one season. With the 26, 27, I've lost count.
Countless
allegations. You know, there was a stretch there where it was a new one coming in every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we even talked about it on the show. Well, we talked about it a lot on the show. But so let's say all of them are, bogus, but for two. That's still two. Legitimate sexual harassment, claims. That's enough to usually get players suspended for a really long time. He didn't even get one per week.
Yeah.
Or a week per, he could have been out for a long time. He's lucky he's not. He's lucky he got all that money. And then when he came back, he didn't play all that great either.
No. The play was not going to be good after such a long layoff. I think everybody pretty much knew that. But just the fact that he, of all people, is the first one to get the fully guaranteed money in the NFL, it's just – it's sick on a lot of different levels, but hey, crime pays in this
crime
case,
does
anyway.
Pay.
The CareerBuilder.com Organization of the Year Award. Yep, I'm looking at you, Washington. And you know what? Jim Irsay and the Colts gave you a run, but ultimately, the Washingtons, the Potato Skins, the Commanders, they still hold on to their title as Organization of the Year. They start off by bringing in Carson Wentz as their big answer at quarterback. You had the ESPN hit job on Daniel Snyder, the article that says that he believes he's untouchable as far as getting rid of the team because he's got so much dirt on all the other owners and on Roger Goodell and everybody else that they can't touch him. They can't fuck with him at all. Meanwhile, his wife, Tanya's outside shouting hail to the Redskins and leading chants and whatnot. So she seems to be as much of a dickhead as he is. Ultimately, they start the process to sell the team after the government announced that they're going to look into some of these finances and some cooked books and holding on to some money that they shouldn't be holding on to. So you think you're bulletproof? Well, the government's coming after you now. So I think that'll be about the end of that. Then they honor... You see my scare quotes here, even though it's a podcast, you can see them. Honor Sean Taylor with that statue that's just a wire structure with mismatched jersey and pants and soccer cleats and just the weirdest, most embarrassing looking thing. And everybody's looking around like, what is this? And that's not embarrassing enough. because week 17, they decide they need to introduce Major Tutty, the Smiling Hog mascot. Why are you introducing a mascot? Why are you introducing it week 17 of the season? And why is it a smiling hog? Who told you this was a good idea?
Oh,
only
man.
The Commanders. Only the Washington Commanders would do something like that. I've probably missed several other things with this organization because there's just so many things. You mentioned one thing I missed, which is the coffee mug with the state of Washington on it, which is so ridiculous. But once again, for everything they've done, and they're probably going to do it again next year, Organization of the Year, the Washington Commanders.
Organizations win championships.
They also embarrass the populace over and over again if they're bad organizations like this. Finally, my last award, the Going Out on Top Award, goes to Lovie Smith because he knew the Houston Texans was going to fire his ass right after the season was over. And he said, instead of going for another tie week 18 with the Indianapolis Colts, which they tied in week one with each other, he says, nah, we're not going for that. We're going to go for two. And what that's going to do when we win this game going for two is going to ruin the Houston Texans' chances of getting the number one overall draft pick, which goes to my Chicago Bears. We would all love to leave our jobs on the last day throwing up middle fingers at our bosses and our organizations, throwing up double birds and saying, fuck you, really fuck you. You kiss my ass, you suck my dick. The whole thing from vacation, kiss my ass, kiss his ass, kiss your ass. We would all love to do that, leaving our jobs. Lovie Smith got a chance to do that by going for two and getting the win and screwing the Texans out of the number one pick. And for that, I say, God bless you, Lovie Smith, and thank you for your service.
It was, like he said, it was almost my quote of the year when with Lovie Smith talking about how that was his biggest win as a Bears coach. His biggest Bears win in his career.
That's right. Thank you, Lovie Smith.
Hey, hey!
And that's it. I'm finished. My voice actually held up. It tried to go out.
Yeah. Well, nice. Yeah, it would. You only went seven minutes over. That's short for us.
Right. Every time I schedule for 2 hours for our work, I'm like, two hours? Are we really going to go there? I should really learn by now. Don't ever be afraid to fill time. We're always going to fill the time and go over it if that's possible. So,
right. Plus, you know, when I'm given awards, you know, we're talking about the things, so... So it creates conversation, and it's funny because I actually find myself like clipping myself on some of the stuff as we're doing the back and forth. Like, okay, I better just like move on to the next one because we could just go off, you know, go kings of non sequitur here, and
yeah, it really could just
go down the rabbit hole. But no, another excellent award show.
Oh, always fun, always a great time.
You know, we laughed a little more. I don't think we cried, but man, there's enough stuff that could have cried about some of this stuff. We actually had somebody basically die on the field this year.
Oh man, this has been crazy. There's always something throughout the years as they go on that we've never seen before. All the years that we're watching football, there's always something come up. I've never seen that. I've never seen a guy throw the ball across the field on a lateral on the last play of the game and get it intercepted for the game-winning touchdown. I've never seen something like that.
I've never seen that before either. That was unique. Or that last play of the Cowboys game with Zeke. I've
never seen the starting running back line up at center for no reason.
And get destroyed.
And get blowed up. I almost wanted to give an award for that, just for the juxtaposition of that. And then the last play of the season last year with Dak running free in the open field with no time left on the clock. Like, Kellen Moore really covering himself in glory the last couple of years with the last plays of the season for the Cowboys. So they don't have to worry about that anymore. He's a goner.
He's a Clipper now.
Man, so many coaches moving around, too. There's an assistant coach bloodletting after the wild card weekend. Seemed like about seven or eight of them got canned just on that weekend alone. So that was pretty wild. I didn't give an award for that either, but I could have.
You have your usual, all your, you know, a lot of your head coach movement. But, yeah, this year it was the year of coordinator movement, it seemed like.
Deflector shields, I call them. Head coaches sitting out their deflector shields, because next year when they get eliminated, it's going to be the head coaches that get
kicked. Well, it's like they're cats. It's like they're nine lives, you know, and all of these – You get your certain number of lives as a coach, and
right.
you know, every time you have to do one of these silly things like get a play calling coach, or how many assistants and coordinators can you how many quarterbacks can you bench, you know, all those things just chip away at those lives that you have, and eventually you have made enough moves and there's nobody left, and look at what Mike McCarthy just did, right? They move mm-hmm. off of Kellen Moore. He's like, I'm taking over the play call. And oh, okay, Mike.
No,
one less shield now, right?
Then they bring in a new coordinator. So is the Schottenheimer, is he just there in name only? Is McCarthy still going to call the plays?
Yeah, no, McCarthy said he's taking over the play calling duties when they fired Kellen Moore. So I don't know if that's going to happen. But then that means that his last line of defense is when he then gives those back.
Yeah.
You know, after week six, when people realize that Mike McCarthy can't call a game once you get past the first 15 scripted plays.
Are you there? Did I leave you? I think I lost Jay. So that'll end our show. As we know, when it's the after show and one of us is dropped, then they can't come back in, because technically the show is supposed to be over anyway. Well, at least we lasted all the way to get all of our awards in. And, of course, coming up next weekend is the Super Duper Bowl pick, where Jay has put me on the spot. I have to make the correct pick against the spread, or else Jay will win the handicapping contest over me. I texted him already earlier this week, and I said the usual torture that I go through to figure out who I want for the Super Bowl. I had one of those moments where it flashed on me who I want to pick, and I'm not moving off of that. So it's different. This is usually I'm not sleeping well and just trying to figure out which way I'm going to go. But I had that moment of clarity. I know who I'm going to pick. I'm not going to reveal it here. But I know I already know who I want, and I'll tell everybody why I want them next week. I'll tell at the same time that I tell Jay. And I'm going to stick with that. And if I lose, I lose. But I have my flash, and I know who I want, and that's where I'm going to stay. I'm going to stick with that pick and not let up, and hopefully it works out for me. We shall see. I probably don't need to put money on that pick. I don't need to feel that secure about it. But there's plenty of free contest to play, you know, DFS and whatnot, and all these sports books that I'm in, they'll probably wind up offering something to entice me to bet on the game, or maybe, you know, maybe just a free bet, something like that. So we'll see how that works out. I'll certainly try to remember to have some of those thoughts next week as well, like prop bets, who do I think is going to be the person you want to pick in DFS to surprise and get some points that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Who do I think is going to go over and under some of these prop numbers, rushing yardage, receiving yardage, and whatnot. I'll try to remember to look up at least one of the sports books during the show next week.